With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The finale of the Bay Bridge series coming up later today right here on 95.7 of the Game. And we'll get back into that stuff. But talking a little Tiger right now, because when you get the red shirt on a Sunday within strokes of the lead, that's big. As a texter said, 925 texter, I'm an A's fanatic, and Tiger winning would be bigger than A's and Giants.
Adam, it'd be monumental.
It's just anywhere. He's one of the few athletes in sports history that has pretty much universal, I don't want to say approval rating, but universal Q and not just Q rating, but he's a magnetism. Yeah. There's a magnetism there where you might love him, you might hate him, you might think he's a dirtbag, you might think he's a misunderstood survivor of child stardom, whatever. Everyone's turning on the TV.
Of course. And I think it's endearing having him go through that stretch of negativity. One of the great sport moments, sports, across sports, is Jack at 40-something years old winning the Masters in 1986. This would be Tiger, dad bod, balding like crazy, coming off of multiple back surgeries and fusions.
That's dad bod.
I know. Well, he still looks phenomenal.
What am I?
Yeah, I know.
Granddad bod?
And he's going up against,
for God's sakes,
he's going up against Jordan Spieth, who's the golden child, right? He's already got three championships at 24 years old, three majors. Mm-hmm. If he gets a fourth, he would join Jack and Tiger as the only guys that young to have that many championships.
Really?
So we're talking about rarefied air. Rarefied air. These are the Michael Jordans of their sport. You know, they don't come around often. So you got the young, up-and-coming superstar in Jordan Spieth, who's the golden child. He is what Tiger was, essentially, as far as a marketing campaign. Not as big, clearly. Versus the aging, grizzled gunslinger of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, and I'll just say quickly, that's the point. It doesn't even matter if he wins.
No.
I mean, you may want him to win.
Of course.
I would like to see him win. It's a great story if he wins, no doubt. The comeback story after 10 years of not winning a major, after 5 years since he won a tournament, basically,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's a great story, but what matters to the game is just that he's in it.
The fact he's on the coverage, back nine of a major, I guarantee you this will be the high, and it's the
morning.
It's
going to be the highest rated golf in years.
Years. Unbelievable. In years. Look, I'm being honest. I judge these things by my timeline. I have all the golf Twitter people
right.
on my timeline.
Right.
When I see the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball people tweeting about Tiger, it tells me this is a national story. This isn't just a golf story. This is a national story. So he's, dude, this is great for golf. I'm excited. I'm pumped. I just want him to finish top five. You know, I would love for him to win, but just
don't
be
fade.
There. Yes. Don't
hang
fade.
In there.
He's one stroke back.
Justin Rose getting into it, too. This is a crowded leaderboard. Yeah. This is going to be an interesting
sexy.
Finish. I hope Chris Haft and Susan Slusser are really sharp today, because you're not going to be paying any attention to those interviews. So it's just going to be me and them co-hosting the show in the 10 and 11 o'clock hours.
I got great questions for them.
Right. You just won't remember them because
what time
you're going to be
it?
Staring at Tiger.
Yeah.
What time is it? Are you guys watching this right now? No, we're at the ballpark trying to get ready for a baseball game.
When
for
was
God's
the
sakes.
Last time you three putted?
When's the last time you three putted, Joe? This weekend?
Last time I three putted was up at Glen Eagles, whatever, the last time I played, Sunday or whatever.
Yeah,
and it
yeah
was
because everyone three putts every time they play.
I'm ridiculous.
This is truly mind boggling. I'm not sure I've ever seen a more impressive golf stat than that.
He's unreal, dude. He's unreal. And the thing is, too, like, similar
and
to
Spieth
Steph.
Is tough. So now it's Spieth, Molinari, Chapel, Kisner tied for the
yeah.
lead, and Tiger with a group one off the lead.
See, and Chapel's from Fresno, local guy. I think he went to UCLA.
Go Chapel.
The thing with Spieth that I love about him, man, is that, and I mean this to honest to God truth, when Steph shoots a three, there's really no three that you're like, no, Steph, don't shoot it. Like, you assume it to go in.
Every time he strokes it, you're thinking that's in.
Every time Jordan makes a putt, I assume it's going in, especially in a major.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand it. I mean, I didn't. And frankly, my golf viewership speaks to this because I actually love watching golf. I'm a rare person at least in the world. I think this is more common in the sports industry. But out in the world, when you tell someone you think golf is thrilling television, they get confused. But I'm down to explain it to you. The reason golf is great on TV is the same reason that the best place at the golf tournament when you actually travel there is the driving range.
Yes.
Because you get to see shot after shot after shot. And people are like, oh, it's so slow. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. After one guy shoots, they cut to another guy shooting.
Exactly.
You don't have to wait for them to walk up the fairway. You're watching another guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it. And yet, I've probably watched 5 golf tournaments in the last 5 years.
Because there's no Tiger.
Because there's no Tiger.
And he's must-view TV.
He's it. And part of that is, you know, there's more and more stuff to watch. There's less and less time, especially, you know, to the extent that golf overlaps with football. I'm choosing football every time.
Everyone is.
Yeah. So there's all that, too. But the fact is, when I get the Twitter alert, Tiger within 3 strokes of the lead on a Sunday, I'm turning that on.
Yeah, no question. And it's great for the
game.
Is there
anyone else in all of sports like that right now?
It used to be Barry Bonds at-bats.
Barry Bonds at-bats were like that.
They would cut in on ESPN, yeah. Barry Bonds at-bats.
Pedro would catch him up on what's been happening.
We used to do beer trips back when I was drinking.
They kept a Pedro on Barry's lawn when Barry was hitting sometimes. It was confusing, but
crazy.
It was important.
The other thing is I would say Red Zone has made it to where there's certain, like, for your fantasy. And again, that's more individualistic, but the way Red Zone is set up, like, I don't know. I feel like, oh, Aaron Rodgers is in the red zone, or
okay,
you know. But it's not like
that's
this.
Not like that.
No.
It's not okay. So here's the scenario I'm setting up, and maybe people will give us a call on this too. We got Connor Letourneau in about 15 minutes. We're gonna get in some hoop talk, but we can toss this idea around throughout the day if people are interested in discussing it. You're sitting in your bedroom, living room, you know, chilling on the couch. You're reading a book. It's like a lazy whatever afternoon. You didn't feel like dealing with the sports world or the outside world. You want to have a calm book reading afternoon. You're reading your book. Suddenly, Twitter or whatever alert pops on your phone. Tiger Woods, 3 strokes off the lead, major championship. You're turning that on right away. What else could pop up on your phone that makes you in a space where you thought you just wanted to chill, now you go, uh-oh, I better put that on.
LeBron.
Yeah.
I'm going to be real. It's one. LeBron. Like, and I don't care what Warrior haters, you know, the Warrior fans that hate LeBron. Like, I get it. I understand you. But you can't deny that you don't want to watch. Like, I love watching LeBron. I love to root against him. I love to watch his incredible feats. I like to watch
how
marvelous the guy is. He's a genius on the court. So for me, I would say LeBron's at the top of the list.
Yeah.
And Tom Brady.
Yeah. Brady, I don't care about Brady because Brady's not going to do something I haven't seen.
No, I know, but I just love watching the Patriots.
A 925 texter just texted one thing that's going to get you the no-hitter perfect game
Good
thing.
Call.
And the guy that jumped to mind good is the call. Guy that we saw on TV right as we were walking into the studio, Justin Verlander.
Yes, good call.
I can imagine because, look, if I get like a Nathan Eovaldi has a no-hitter in the sixth. I'm like, eh, okay.
Is there anything worse than that?
Right.
The fifth inning perfect game
yeah.
alert.
But if it's like Justin Verlander has 12 strikeouts and a no-hitter going in the seventh, I'm like,
yeah. And Kershaw, too.
Kershaw's on
that
list.
Way for me as well.
Yeah.
As in, can't stand the Dodgers. I love watching Kershaw.
Here's a text. 2 minutes left in any football game, and I mean any football game. That's a little aggressive for me.
I don't know. That Saints-Vikings finish was pretty spectacular. That's as good as it gets, I feel like.
Yeah. No, a great end. But that's not really what I'm talking about, right?
Aaron Rodgers down 6 with the ball at the end.
Here we go.
With
another text. This used to be Tim Lincecum on Sunday.
No question.
Exactly.
Lincecum day.
That was that's the sort
Timmy
of thing
day.
I'm talking
Timmy
about.
Timmy day.
The
was
Bonds
it.
At
yep.
bat, the Lincecum day, the Tiger on the prowl. Those are the sort. There's not a lot. There's not a lot of things in that category, and Tiger's been that for
20 years.
20 years?
20 years.
99 was the first?
Well, he popped on the scene in 96, 97.
Right, but it,
but really, 99? Yeah, he did the Tiger Slam in 2000, basically, was where he was at his apex, where he won all four majors in a row, essentially.
Not in a calendar year, though, so does it really?
Oh, my God. He's
650, Clay about to walk out of the club in China.
That is good knowledge. Good knowledge.
Oh, Clay's boat just docked in Cabo. Check the video.
I got to say, Bryce Harper, for me, I do enjoy a Bryce Harper at-bat. Like, when I'm watching
Bryce Harper up in the bottom of the ninth,
that
might get you.
I really enjoy him. And then Mike Trout. Like, I know he doesn't have the sex appeal, but I'll be honest. Like, if I see the Angels game on quick pitch,
I
just love watching him.
Did you happen to be watching MLB Network at any point in the last several days and catch one of the several Mike Trout commercials that are in rotation? Because now every time I see a Mike Trout commercial, I get pissed off at Rob Manfred again.
Yes.
That I can't believe he had the gall to say that stuff in the middle of All-Star break. It makes me want to kick him in a very soft place. It's so obnoxious. The guy's literally, he doesn't want to talk, and yet here he is doing commercials for an app, a baseball app that goes on my phone.
Yeah.
And you're complaining that he's not willing enough to, Rob Manfred.
It's brutal. How about this one? It used to be Shaq free throws for me. I used to love like hit with the left hand off the ball and like literally shooting downward.
He did. At one point, he got it to where not only did he take his left hand off, but he also like palmed the ball and like hitched.
Yes.
And then just like flicked his wrist at the end. Oh, boy. Shaq was, that was basically the yips by the end.
It was. It totally
like,
was.
Like he started as just a big man who couldn't shoot free throws. And then it became the yips. Like, he was doing all sorts of goofy stuff to try to get it worked out.
Oh,
that was god-awful.
Dino's on point today.
I'll be real. It used to be
Dino's much more awake than me. I can tell.
It used to be Buster at-bats.
That's Dino.
But the Buster at-bats have lost their luster.
Yeah. No more Buster luster.
That's, ooh.
I apologize. Ooh. I apologize. Ronaldo PKs from a 480 texter.
That's a relatively young and new phenomenon, I guess, for America.
Oh, here's a good one. Griffey in the 90s.
Oh, Griffey had 7 consecutive games with a home run. I had the card, dude.
And it was so sweet.
He had the prettiest swing in baseball history, maybe.
Well, I don't know if it's exactly this category, but certainly everyone is going to be watching the Warriors very closely this year. Oh, you know what? Make sure Vanessa stays on hold because she's got one that we should have thought of, and we're going to let her get it in before we speak to Connor Letourneau next. Matt Kolsky, Joe Shasky, it's the Ski Team on 95.7 The Game. We are back, not back in the 80s, but back on the air after a short break. Quickly, let me run through what we were just talking about, you know, the must-watch TV, the thing that if the alert on your phone goes off, you'd have to look at it over the course of time in sports. I'm going to read off the list and then quickly take Vanessa's call because she has one that we blew it on not thinking of. 415 texter, Griffey in the 90s. 925, Jordan in the 90s. 707, Ricky on first base. Absolutely. A different 707, Mike Tyson in his prime. That one's from Drew. Definitely Tyson in his prime was a must watch, and you had to get there on time or you missed it.
Yeah.
Canseco and McGuire back to back is a great call from a 480. Let's go to Vanessa in San Leandro. Who's your must-watch, Vanessa?
Hey, guys. Definitely a must-watch for me is Serena Williams.
Absolutely.
Good call.
Yeah. She's dominant. She's the... She's
to win any...
Say again?
Oh, yeah. Any open that she's in, I make sure that I tune in, especially if she's about to win one.
Yeah. Especially a final with Serena. And even though she lost the last one, thanks for the call, Vanessa. That's a great one. She is both physically, and not unlike Tiger was in his prime, Serena has not only an immense physical edge over the competition, but a mental edge. She stares daggers through people, and she is such a competitor. She's one of my favorite athletes ever to watch.
And the Q rating across genders, across generations, mm-hmm. across demographics, everyone is interested. She's got the clothing line. She's got the television appeal. The obvious supreme athleticism and dominance.
A lot like a few guys that play for the local basketball team, which is what we're going to get into right now with Connor Letourneau, who, of course, is on the Warriors beat for the San Francisco Chronicle. And I know it's sort of your vacation time, Connor, so we appreciate you joining us. And let's just start with the most recent news in Warrior Land, which is Jonas Jerebko. Tell us what to expect out of the Swedish assassin.
Swedish,
what's his?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jonas Trebko, he's kind of going to come in and try to fill that Omri Caspi role. But if you remember, Omri was brought in largely to hit threes off the bench, and he didn't do much of that. He was a good cutter, but I think only attempted 22 three-pointers all of last season before he was waived to free up that playoff spot for Quinn Cook. And so Jonas is a guy who is really good from deep. He shot around 40% from there last season with Utah. He had, I think he hit 65 three-pointers last season, which would have ranked second among the Warriors reserves behind Nick Young. So with Nick gone, with Omri gone, he's going to be asked to come in and be kind of a three-point specialist. You know, they'll want decent positional defense out of him and to play his role in the offensive system, but that's the main reason why he's going to be on the roster, is to hit threes. And he's not going to play a ton, but he's going to help take the load off the All-Stars a little bit in the regular season. I don't necessarily expect him to play a ton come playoff time, but he'll have his role in the regular season.
Actually, let me follow up quickly on that, Connor, because I wonder, the way they're building this depth now, do you think there's a possibility that we see something, not maybe not all season, maybe not for more than a month here, a week there, but something almost like, I don't know, switching off games between Iguodala and Livingston, just like cutting their intended games played all the way down into maybe the 50s in the regular season, just because it seemed like neither of them were that engaged last year in the regular season anyway, and you need them so badly come postseason.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of that. I think Steve's going to get very creative in this regular season. I think you saw this past regular season, complacency was such a big issue, and Steve is a big fan of the game within the game, largely just to keep things interesting for a group who is going to be trying to play deep into June for the fifth straight year. I think adding Cousins is going to make things a lot more interesting and going to help in that department. But the reality is he's not going to come back until probably January or February. And so in that meantime, Steve's got to keep things as interesting as he can. And I think there's no need for him to wear out the Andre Iguodalas or the Sean Livingstons of the world for games that don't really matter. You know, you saw this past season, those guys were inconsistent in the regular season, but when it came time for the playoffs, they really took it to another level and were really key for them. And that's really all the Warriors are going to be asking out of them next season.
Connor, you know, Cousins kept referencing Draymond in the press conference the other day, and when he did his little interview one-on-one with our 95.7 The Game host, Matt Steinmetz. But Draymond and Cousins, I know they've got a quick friendship going here that they've had for a couple of years. Is that too much fire in one locker room?
I don't think so. I said this the other day on a podcast I went on, but I think the Draymond Cousins relationship is going to be very key this season. You know, we all know about Cousins. He has a reputation for being a bit temperamental, petulant, immature. And the thing is, he and Draymond are actually very similar in that they got this far because of their competitive desire, their unyielding will, you know, their bravado. Those are all positive things, but the difference between Draymond and Cousins is that Draymond has channeled that energy in a positive way, generally speaking. Yes, he still gets a lot of technicals, but he's the emotional leader of this team. He's well-respected throughout the league, and Cousins hasn't really figured that out. So I think this season is going to be really key because I think Draymond can help Cousins in a big way in terms of figuring out how to take that energy and that competitiveness and channel it in a positive way for the team.
Is it possible that, or at least somewhat possible, or possible that somewhat that is just context? I hear what you're saying, and certainly DeMarcus has had some things that go beyond the sort of aggressive behavior of Draymond into sort of ugly incidents, but nothing really bad. I mean, I think the worst thing is being rude to a reporter. And I just feel like Draymond might play just as poorly if he'd been on losing teams his entire career.
No, I completely understand that. And I actually agree with you. I think that Cousins' reputation gets blown out of proportion a little bit. I mean, you got to keep in mind, this guy spent 7-plus seasons in a Sacramento situation that was completely dramatic and unfair to him. I mean,
yes,
they had a revolving door of coaches. They had a bunch of pieces around him that didn't really make sense. They didn't treat him the way that a superstar is normally treated in this league. So I understand to a degree why he was frustrated, why he acted out at times. He was a lot better in New Orleans, you know, which was a much healthier environment, a much healthier situation. The Warriors are banking on the fact that their own locker room culture is going to win out. You know, they've taken similar gambles, maybe not to this extent, but they've taken gambles on Nick Young, JaVale McGee, Matt Barnes, and just trusted that when you're in a locker room environment that's positive and about winning, that, you know, someone like DeMarcus can come in and buy in. So I don't think it's a major concern, but I do think that Draymond can help.
Connor, I want one of you guys to walk up to DeMarcus and ask him if he's going to start playing golf with Curry and the crew, Iguodala and them, because I'm very interested. Tiger, Sunday, you know, obviously the relevance there. But I'm more interested in this San Antonio trade that went down. What do you think the Warriors think of this move, and how do you think San Antonio now stacks up in the West with DeMar DeRozan?
You know, I will say that the Warriors, and Steve in particular, they've always had a ton of respect for Kawhi, but they've also had a lot of respect for DeMar DeRozan. What DeMar has done the past couple of years in Toronto has been very impressive. I don't think he gets enough credit. You know, 2 years ago, averaging 27 points per game, shooting at the clip he was shooting at, and then last year to lead that Toronto team that, honestly, in my opinion, wasn't that talented, to the second-best record in the league in the regular season. Yes, they got swept by the Cavs in the playoffs, but that doesn't change the fact that he was down. They were downright impressive for 6 months in that regular season. So it'll be really interesting. I personally think that a healthy Kawhi is a notch or two above a healthy DeMar DeRozan, and I think that with a healthy Kawhi, Toronto could be a real factor in the East. I still put them behind Boston and Philadelphia, but I think they have a shot. With DeMar, I think that San Antonio, what they basically did is they said, we're not going to rebuild. You know, we refuse to rebuild. We're going to make the playoffs again. We might not contend for a championship, but we're not going to be one of these teams that just presses reboot, starts all over again. So they'll still be competitive, be a playoff caliber team. I think they'll be in the bottom half of that playoff picture. But I don't see them being any sort of factor when it comes to the top four seeds.
Well, let me ask you about those top four seeds, because I kind of think people are forgetting this is not replacing Kawhi with DeMar, really, at least not in terms of last year's team. It's adding DeMar to a team that was seventh in the playoff race without Kawhi or DeMar DeRozan last year. So I think people may be sleeping a little bit on the Spurs, but I just think in general what's happened in the West actually overall plays incredibly well for the Warriors. And let me just ask it to you this way. Assuming this Carmelo thing shakes out and he ends up in Houston, and the Rockets also retain Clint Capella, who technically is still a restricted free agent, do you feel like Houston is as good as they were last year? Because I feel like they may have gotten a little bit worse, and a lot of the other teams got a little bit better, but all that's done is create more of a mess behind the Warriors and sort of separate them from the pack even more.
Yeah, I agree. I think when all is said and done, this offseason league-wide was kind of a best-case scenario for the Warriors, because at the end of the day, in my mind, their two biggest competitors are still in the Eastern Conference, and yep, those two biggest competitors being Boston and Philly, I don't think they necessarily got markedly better either. So, you know, the big question was, where's LeBron going to go? And I think him going to the Lakers and the Lakers not being able to add another superstar caliber player alongside him was great for the Warriors, because I do think that any team LeBron's on is going to be a threat and going to be worth being wary of. But with no other big name guys on that team, when you have, you know, the other big acquisitions being the Rajon Rondos and the JaVale McGees and the Lance Stevensons of the world, I don't see the Lakers necessarily pushing the Warriors in the seven-game series. And I agree with you that I think Houston's a little bit worse. I actually think that Oklahoma City is better.
Yep.
I think that San Antonio's a little bit worse. You make the point that Kawhi was injured most of the last season. So I guess if you're taking that into account, they're maybe a little better. But I don't think there's anyone in the West that can beat the Warriors in a seven-game series right now.
Connor, it's the last season in Oakland before they move over to their new arena, Chase Arena. Are they going to do anything special? You know, patches on the jerseys? Are they going to maybe commemorate all the years in Oakland on the tickets? Like, have you heard or gotten any wind of what they might do for this last season in Oakland to kind of go out on a nice hoorah?
Yeah, no, they're going to, this whole season is going to be about commemorating their time in Oakland and trying to convince the fan base that, you know, even though we're moving to San Francisco, that Oakland is still in our hearts and we're still the Bay Area's team and we're still Oakland's team. They got that started last year with the town jerseys, which I personally think are their coolest jerseys
definitely
they've maybe ever had.
For sure.
Oh, the city. I'm sorry. I got to go with the cable car city.
Hang up on. Someone turn Joe's mic off. Go ahead, Connor.
So they started that a little bit last year with the town jersey, and I think you're going to see a few more things sprinkled throughout this next season that are going to be similar, that are going to, you know, be homage to the city of Oakland. But their big thing is going to be over and over, we're not saying goodbye to Oakland. We're still the Bay Area's team. We're still the Golden State Warriors. And I know the fans might not fully believe that, but that'll be the party line.
Connor, we always appreciate you taking the time. Thanks a lot for spending some of your off-season with us.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Connor Letourneau, San Francisco Chronicle Warriors beat writer. And I'm glad you asked that at the end, actually, because as an East Bay resident, I've chosen the East Bay. Like, if we're in a, you know, I feel you move to a place, you got to choose sides sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I chose East Bay many years ago.
I get that.
And I love those town jerseys, man.
Oh, no, they're great.
If I was going to buy a Warriors jersey, which I probably won't because it feels a little weird for me to do that, yeah. It would be a Klay Thompson town jersey. Well, because, of course, I love the town. And
Claytheism, the movement that has taken the NBA by storm.
Never forget.
My jersey game, I have tons of jerseys at home. I have not bought a jersey in a long time. My new thing now is the T-shirt jerseys because then I can wear them much more appropriately.
Action.
And there's nothing worse than a basketball jersey because I hate when I see people who don't wear the undershirt with the basketball jersey out of the game.
Clearly, you haven't seen the way my arms look.
Well, I mean, it's okay at the beach, at the pool, things like that. I'm not trying to see you on BART.
No, you know, that's true.
You know?
That's true.
Too much.
Someone on the text line, I don't know if they're trolling or trying to be your friend, but they wanted me to say Frisco, Frisco, Frisco to you.
Hmm. Interesting.
Are you a Frisco is cool or a Frisco is not cool guy?
Oof, this is a very complicated issue. For
it
me, I'm totally cool
issue.
With this. I'm actually going to do a video with Bonte on this.
Good, because you and Bonte are kind of my reference points for San Francisco, and both of you say Frisco is cool.
Because
so
our
I have to approve Frisco.
Our generation. So you talk to my dad, my grandpa, they're like, no!
Exactly,
how dare you? But we grew up in the rap era and the Frisco Choppers era, where there's this entire movement in the Excelsior, guys wearing the Frisco Choppers motorcycle shirts, and you had RBL Posse and all these different rap groups, and it was a cultural slang for us, and then we always embraced it. We always did.
Yeah, out with the old, in with the new. Frisco it is.
Yeah, just don't call it San Fran. That's the one that's like...
See, but you know now there's going to be like the kids who are five now are going to start calling it San Fran when they're grown up, and you're going to be the old guy sitting on your porch banging the rocking chair in anger.
Yeah, Garoppolo did it, and I tweeted at him like, nah, dude, like, you took the L.
Go ahead and go Frisco, whatever you want. Oh! Wait, you just said that was an L. So that was his first L.
Yeah, so he's now got two on his permanent record. Okay. That the last one though, that was intercepted at the goal line and ran back to the house like the Jerome Harrison Super Bowl interception. So yeah, Jimmy, we need to have a sit down.
Hey,
I'll be your life coach.
Jimmy, everything's cool, man. Just remember.
There's nothing routine about the way I get down.
Respect.
I'm thinking of Tony Bruno, two chicks at the same time when I hear that.
Oh boy.
Tony.
Okay. Back into what I was actually trying to say about Connor. it's great that they're going to celebrate Oakland, but more importantly, what they're going to do for Oakland is win another NBA championship. That's what they're going to do, is finish their stint in the East Bay by winning three of four.
Three in a row would be four. Three in a row,
four or five. Sorry. They've already won three of four by stretching it to four or five and three in a row and officially being one of the great NBA dynasties.
It'd be,
they're already one of the great NBA teams, but I think you got to get, because there's several three-peaters.
Yes.
There's a handful of back-to-back, several three-peaters, but that sort of next level past three-peat, it's basically Bulls, Lakers, Celtics.
Yeah, and I would say in Bay Area pantheon, if you will, it's the greatest run. Right now, we are in the middle of the greatest run. I know the A's went three in a row. I know that. They literally went to the brink four straight years, brought back three, and they're going for another. Like, this is it. We are
certainly
in Camelot.
If they win the fourth, that's the best run in Bay Area sports history.
No question in my mind. The Niners got right to the precipice, if you will, where they handed the ball off. They were beating the New York Giants 6-3 or whatever the heck the score was in the 1990 NFC Championship game, going for a three-peat, handed the ball off. Joe Montana rolled right, got hit by Pepper Johnson, knocked out of the game. Hand off to Roger Craig. Lawrence Taylor strips him, and the New York Giants suffocate the game away from us in the final minute, kick a field goal, end up beating the Buffalo Bills, and that would have been our three-peat.
Oh, well.
Yeah. but this Warrior team, and here's the other part. Not only that, they are literally in their, they're still in their prime.
Yes.
This ain't the end.
We're
this
not
ain't like
quite
the,
sure how long this might go. And the, boy, the Boogie thing makes it that much more interesting in terms of extending the run even longer. But I guess what I really wanted to take away from Connor, and it's something that we've talked about a little bit as well, is just how well this offseason broke for them.
Oh.
It's unbelievable. And I would include Jarebko in that.
Evans.
I would include the draft pick, Jacob Evans, who's exactly who they wanted. And we heard the stories about how, oh, well, they thought they might have to trade up, but then it turned out he just fell right into their laps. With Carmelo going to Houston and Trevor Ariza leaving Houston, that benefits them.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think, obviously, Kawhi not being in the conference benefits them. LeBron not having a star teammate benefits them. Here's the question I would ask you. Given everything that's happened so far in the NBA offseason, if I made you choose right now, who are the other three teams in the top four of the Western Conference playoff picture?
The top four? Wow, this is fluid.
It really is, right?
That's a tough question.
How many candidates
are
there?
I can make an argument for some. See, I'm partial to Utah. I like Utah a lot.
Absolutely.
I really like them, and I like the way they match up against certain teams because they're going to lock you down.
So, obviously, we expect the Warriors to be the number one seed.
Yes.
Championship!
I like the Spurs, like you.
We have D'Angelo Barbosa. We going to be championship?
Like you. I like the Spurs. I'm very interested to see the Spurs and Houston play each other a bunch of times in that division.
Okay, so Spurs,
but I still
Utah.
I think Houston's somewhere in there. I don't know that they're going to be the number one or two seed, but I think they're
in. No, but I'm just saying.
And I like OKC.
Here's the point that I'm making. Let's just say the first three you said.
Yeah.
I'm calling those your choices. So that means you're saying the other three teams that will have a home playoff series in the first round are the Spurs, the Jazz, and the Rockets. Now, let me list the teams that you're not putting in the top four in the West. The Portland Trail Blazers, who were the third seed last year.
Yeah.
The Oklahoma City Thunder, who were the fourth seed and got better.
Yeah.
The New Orleans Pelicans, who were the sixth seed and got better. The Minnesota Timberwolves, who have a ton of talent. The Denver Nuggets, who just missed the playoffs and got better. The Los Angeles Lakers, who just added LeBron James.
Uh-oh, welcome to Big Baller Zone.
And back-to-back champion JaVale McGee.
So the thing that I always tell people is that the regular season is very, very different than the NBA playoffs. Unlike baseball, where you play a three-game set, a four-game set, in basketball, it's one night against one team. You hop on a plane, you go play someone else. So, like, stylistically, like, I think I love Utah in series matchups because they can kind of adjust in that defense. It can grind you down. But then during the regular season, you love someone like Houston because of
Portland.
Or Portland because of the style of the way they play. It's really difficult to adjust if you're coming off a plane and playing them in one night. That's why Denver every year has a much better regular season record because teams come flying in one night, even though their roster isn't the greatest.
Yeah, to your point, Denver 31-10 at home last year, 15-26
31-10?
Uh-huh.
That's an incredible home record.
They had the best home record other than the Spurs in the entire Western Conference.
Right, but that's the kind of stuff I think about, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, my whole point was, I think the Suns, Mavericks, and Grizzlies all got better.
Mm-hmm.
Probably none have a shot at the playoffs.
Agreed. Kings, too.
The Kings are awful.
I like the Kings roster.
They got some decent young guys. They might be interesting in a couple years, but they're the worst team in the West by far. The Lakers and or the Clippers, rather, we'll see. I don't quite know what to expect from that group. It's kind of a ragtag bunch, but they did win 42 games last year, which got them close to the playoffs.
Mediocre.
Yeah, you're probably right, Dino. Mediocre is probably right. But
Jerry West.
The Lakers, the Nuggets, the T-Wolves, the Spurs, the Pelicans, the Jazz, the Thunder, the Blazers. That's eight teams, plus the Rockets, nine teams for seven spots. And honestly, I would not be shocked if any of those nine teams was in the top four. Or if any of those nine teams was missed the playoffs. I guess I'd be shocked if the Rockets missed the playoffs altogether.
But again, we saw it last year. It's attrition. So many stars went down last year.
Yeah. I mean, look, injuries are going to determine some of it. But just as you look at the picture right now.
Good point.
The parity from 2 to 10 to 11, maybe.
Tiger just hit a huge putt. I'm sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to knock you off. He needed that so bad. He's one back.
Thank you, God.
Thank you, God.
Thank you, God.
Yes.
You know where we've gotten to now, though.
The barf zone.
Don't screw this up.
I need like 15 guys in a. It's an aggregate playoff. You play four holes if they go to a playoff. My.
Well, right now the way the leaderboard is gathered at the top. First of all, it's names you know:
Rory, Jordan Spieth, Tiger Woods, Justin Rose, sexy. Very sexy.
I don't like the way your voice turned when you mentioned Justin Rose's name, and I bet if he heard it, he really wouldn't like it. But
prettiest
but
swing in golf.
You're so creepy.
Matt Kuchar hanging around,
yes.
Kevin Chappell, Rory, Jordan, and of all people, Francesco Molinari in
good
the league.
For him.
We'll keep an eye on it, but I'm going to try to get Joe to talk some baseball.
My bad.
Coming up next, because we do still have A's and Giants playing game three. And actually, yesterday's game didn't even matter. Today's game is the one that determines who goes home with the Bay Bridge Trophy. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, there's a guy behind, too. So you got to give spoiler alerts next time you're going to yell out golf results.
Spoiler alert. I'm excited.
Ski team, vaguely focused on 95.7 The Game. We are back. Matt Kolsky, Joe Shasky, a little ski team on a Sunday morning approaching the halfway point. And shortly after the halfway point, Chris Haft, Giants beat writer at MLB.com, will join us. Then the great Susan Slusser in the 11 o'clock hour to get the Oakland Athletics side of the Bay Bridge series. But let me start here with you, Giants fan Joe Shasky. How are you feeling after a loss? Because we talked a lot before this series about how it was a bigger series for the Giants. And I don't want to, like, panic or mm-hmm. get overwrought after one game, because you probably felt pretty good after game one. Going into that, you probably had some question marks, and they look great. Giants look great. Last night, they actually force extra innings, have a chance to steal victory from the jaws of defeat, can't hold on and do it. And I don't know what it is. It's situational to a degree, and it's something we've talked about, that this was a bigger series. But I look at this, and somehow the A's loss yesterday didn't worry me that much about the A's, but that one, or 2 days ago rather, the Giants loss yesterday, every time they lose, I get the feeling of like, they're in big trouble.
I hear you. But if they can win this series, you split against the A's. And if you look at who they've played over the last couple of weeks, it's the Cubs, It's the Rockies.
It's been a tough schedule. That doesn't let up quite yet, though.
No, but just tread water. Tread water. And I expected Bumgarner to come out and give this team seven strong innings. You know, you don't have to win every Bumgarner start, but go deep into the game. Salvage the bullpen a little.
A four-inning outing from Bumgarner was really disappointing. That was a thing I thought about with the loss, too, is you kind of can't afford to lose Bumgarner games, right? It seems a silly thing to say one game's as good as another, but we don't know what Cueto is. That's the biggest part about today, right? Is
no clue.
What is Johnny Cueto?
No clue. And is...
Who was it we talked to yesterday that said they didn't expect Cueto to finish the season? Was that with you yesterday?
No,
That must have been Friday with JD.
Who said that?
So, when you wake me up at 6 a.m. 2 days straight, I forget what happened my entire previous life before that. So I don't know who it was. But we talked to someone on Friday, and it wasn't just JD, who said, no offense to JD. I mean, I think it was a more connected beat writer type of person who said, I would be surprised if Johnny Cueto finished the season.
That's interesting to hear. I mean, clearly the guy's been dealing with arm issues all year. He hasn't looked right outside of the first 2 weeks of the season. And, you know, they're on the hook for so much money when it comes to Johnny Cueto. If he goes down and it's a year-long rehab process to get back, I mean...
Alex Pavlovich, it may have... Yes, I think it was Alex Pavlovich.
Well, because John...
That makes sense. We had Pavs on Friday. I'm pretty sure it was him who said, I'd be more surprised than not if he made a complete... season of starts.
That's alarming. That's really, really alarming.
If you're out there, don't like confront Alex Pavlovich about that, because I'm not 100% sure it was him.
it's alarming because they need him. They need him really bad, and they allocated a ton of money to him. And for him to go down in any fashion, that's pretty devastating, especially considering that. I mean, and again, this is part of the Bumgarner conversation that real Giants fans don't want to have is. Yeah, he got hurt in two funky, wacky, zany ways.
But it still cost him two prime years.
Exactly. And I'm starting to get concerned there, too. And he's up for a contract. And if you've spent a bunch of money on Cueto, you know how this organization treats that luxury tax. Oh, my God.
They're doing it right now. They're talking about it right now, about how they can't violate the luxury tax.
I know. And like last night, Hunter Pence, I know he had a couple of good at-bats. And you know what? He actually smoked one down the line.
Hunter Pence, after we pronounced him for dead all day yesterday, 3-for-5 with two big RBIs.
But all slap hits. I mean, the guy still has zero home runs.
I know, but let me ask you this.
He can't be DHing. Like, that's the problem with the Giants.
3-for-5 with two RBIs.
Hey, good.
So here's the question. Here's the question.
He's batting .227.
I know, but wouldn't you kind of think in a let's make it the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
In a road World Series game, you'd want Hunter Pence DHing over most of the other guys you could put just because he's Hunter damn Pence. And I know I'm not usually a guy who tries to sell people on the magic or any of that stuff.
I'd rather have Panda. I think if all things were considered equal,
well, he's starting
and Longoria's
right now,
healthy.
But he's not right now. So I'm just saying, like, Hunter Pence... He is the guy who goes 3-for-5 with two RBIs after you spent 3 hours that morning calling him a worthless waste of space. That's who he is.
That's called the Edgar Renteria 2010 theory.
Hey, but where would we be if not for Edgar Renteria?
I spent 2.5 years bashing the dude. He did absolutely nothing.
Barry Zito, same thing.
Came back in time just to hit the biggest home run in San Francisco Giants history.
510 texter says, I'm bracing myself for the presentation of the Bridge Trophy. The winner should keep it in their locker room as a chamber pot. Aggressive.
Echo.
Aggressive.
Echo
we
that.
Had a steel worker who was very upset about me dissing the trophy a few days ago.
But here's the absurdity of the trophy, right? Here's the absurdity. If it's a split, a 3-3 split, all right? It's not based on who scored more runs, who won by more runs. It's who wins today. So if the Giants win today and it's a 3-3 split... Because we won the last game, we get it. That's not a trophy. That's a participation award that you decided to hand out to someone. This is why this whole thing is stupid. I don't even want to waste breath on it.
Well, but you got to break the tie somehow.
Yeah, arm wrestling match, okay? Bochy Melvin, let's see it, you know? Maybe 9 holes. Let me see 9 holes between your best golfer and my best golfer. Like, something other than this free throws. Penalty kicks, you know? Give me something, you know? I'm not trying to have, like, oh, you won the third game and we split. Like, can you imagine? Hey, it's game 6 of the NBA Finals.
How about a
and that's it, guys.
Wrestling match between Stomper and Lucille.
No, oh. It would be Derek Holland, first off, because he is your pro wrestling aficionado.
Derek Holland and, yes. and Stomper?
And who would the other guy be?
Stomper.
I'm not a
Let
Lucille.
Let Derek Holland wrestle Stomper.
I'm anti-Lucille.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Hot take.
Yeah.
888-957-9570. Joe Shasky hates Lucille.
I do.
Lucille hater.
He shouldn't have gotten a ring. I don't like that he parades around the rings. It bothers
me.
Wow. And he, like, stuffs it in people's faces.
Wow.
It's obnoxious.
What a jerk.
It's obnoxious.
Lucille, you heard him. Come on down to the studio, Lucille. You want some? Get some. I don't think that... How many baseball teams have mascots?
Well, the Philly Fanatic is the one true owner, right. And then the San Diego Chicken.
Well, but that doesn't exist anymore.
It should.
Agreed. I'd love a San Diego Chicken. But that's not a thing.
But that's why.
But how many teams even have them? I'm serious.
But that,
I don't think the White Sox have a mascot.
But that's
oh, no, they
why
do
I don't
Southpaw.
Like it. That's why
Dang
I don't
it.
Like because it feels manufactured. It's the same thing I said about the 49ers creating a band. There's only one NFL team that had a band. That's the Washington Redskins. The Niners should have never had a band. It's stupid.
So you're saying a hip-hop group doesn't count as a band?
No, Niner Noise, the drum people. It's terrible. It was so annoying in the parking lot.
Oh,
we were all anti-Niner Noise.
I thought you were talking about the team was in a band.
Oh, they... Yeah.
Because only one team was in a band.
Who's that?
Chicago Bears, man. Get the heck out of here.
The Niners did that rap video thing, too, in 1988.
Huh.
Jerry Rice had
now
a poof
do the math
on his
for me. Which
I
came
know.
First, 85 or 88?
That's all right. But we were on the verge of repeating, and we
let
beat
me
you. In
let me have my thing
on the road.
Can I have my one
cold.
Thing? It's the one thing.
I know.
Did you realize how hard? Do you realize what it's like to be a Bears fan? You don't, because you're wearing a Niners shirt right now.
Yeah.
Let me have my one thing, because it's a life of pain.
Ooh.
For the tiebreaker, not a 510 texter wants an arm wrestling contest on the pitcher's mound between the Kuiper brothers.
I'd rather a drinking contest
Although,
between the two.
The problem with that is if you're a Giants fan, just, I think, age-wise, you got the bad end of that matchup.
Don't sleep on old man strength.
Doesn't old man strength kick in at like 50? Does it get more at 60? Is that a thing?
I don't know.
How old are the Kuiper brothers?
When you're from a farm town, like the Kuipers are.
Yeah, they do. They got farm boy strength, that's for sure. First of all, every sport has mascots to the texter who thinks it makes baseball, specifically. There's mascots in every sport.
You know who's my most underrated mascot?
Benny the Bull.
No, it's the Phoenix Suns guy.
Oh, the muscle guy?
Yeah, I liked him.
I preferred the gorilla.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, you're talking about the gorilla.
It's like a Chewbacca lookalike.
He's a gorilla.
Oh, is that a gorilla? I didn't know
he was a
gorilla.
Phoenix gorilla.
Yeah,
he used
I liked
to do
him.
Crazy dunks.
Yes!
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was really cool. Thunder was okay.
Dwayne Kuiper, 68. Glenn, definitely a few years younger, right? That doesn't even list his brother. How rude. I'm just looking into the Kuiper arm wrestling thing like it's really going to happen. But, that's what's happening.
You know
right
what?
Now.
You know what? I got it all wrong. The Kuipers should milk a cow. That's how we determine who's going to win. Who can get more milk out of the cow?
That's rude.
Well, he's talked about it, no?
No, they do, yeah.
Right?
They talk about farming.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing, but still.
Or
making him do a farm competition. So
if we want to laugh, I'm thinking Ahmed versus Brody in like a pull-up push-up contest. That would be funny.
I'd watch that. It's a 13-year gap, by the way.
Ooh, that is a big year.
Yeah.
That's a big gap.
So I like Glenn's chances if we do the arm wrestling. No offense to Dwayne, who I love as a broadcaster.
The elephant for the A's, Stomper, I do like him.
Did you know they've done a thing, and they did this in Chicago with cows. I don't know what the cows had to, well, I guess it was Mrs. O'Leary's cows. Maybe it was an anniversary of the Chicago Fire.
Okay.
I'm going somewhere with this.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken little Stomper statues and different artists have painted them and they're all over Oakland. There's Stomper all over Oakland right now. Like
Is
different
there?
Versions of Stomper. Yeah, I went to Drake's dealership the other day and
great
there's
a little spot.
Great spot.
Good
there's
fries.
Stomper hanging out in front, painted all in multicolors, looking sharp. And I guess there's like different artistic versions of Stomper across the city of Oakland.
I always liked the elephant logo itself, and during the 80s specifically, I always thought it was just really cool. It was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, solid logo. Not sure what it has to do with the Athletics per se.
Who cares?
But yeah, what do you need that for?
Yeah, it's like, isn't that kind of like the Roll Tide, the Alabama, when don't they have an elephant that has nothing to do with the Crimson Tide?
Big Al, baby. Roll Tide.
Is that Nick Saban? Nick, is that you? Are you trying to fix the NCAA?
First you invite Alon to speak whenever he wants, then you let him bring up Alabama. Great job, Joe. Well, yeah. Really well done,
Alabama.
There. Before you know it, we're going to be talking Crimson Tide football.
Rogue damn Tide!
925, there's a stomper at Fenton's in Oakland as well. Yeah, I've heard they're all over. Elena, our resident East Bay expert, told me that Stomper's all over town. I was telling her about my delightful experience with Stomper at Drake's dealership.
Sweet.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.